Welcome back to Lifeline on Near FM with Michael Sullivan. Now, on the line, I have Patricia Rickard-Clark, and she is the chairperson of Safeguarding Ireland. And we're going to be chatting about Safeguarding Ireland's new campaign, which is a call for more people to document their wishes on places of care. Good morning, Patricia. How are you?
Good morning, Michael.
And it's great to talk to you again. I think it was around this time last year we had a chat as well.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. I think it was on, was it on financial abuse or something?
It was indeed. That's exactly what it was on about. But you know, as I'm getting on in years myself, I'm interested in these issues.
And sure.
And for anyone who's doing any interviews, it's always good to be interested in the issues that you're talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
Now, I was actually, I'm not surprised, I have to be honest, because I'll tell you a little story that a friend of my wife, her mother has, she's in her mid-80s, and she has taken the decision now that she wants to change her situation, as you might say, and wants to go in somewhere. And I said to myself, isn't it a pity that we do, and we a lot of us do it, we leave all these decisions to the very last minute. Maybe you could run through us what the campaign's about and what we should actually be doing.
Yep. Well, I suppose Safeguarding Ireland has a number of organisations as members of it, and our main aim is to promote the safeguarding of vulnerable adults and to protect them from all forms of abuse. So certainly we have come across many situations where people are in nursing homes where they don't want to be, where they're told they're going in for respite care, when in fact the intention is that they remain there, and many of these situations. So we decided to do a survey and to find out exactly, were people really aware that they should be planning ahead for these situations, as you've already said. And 80% actually haven't thought about, talked about, or indeed documented where they wish to be if they need long-term care. Now, this survey was across all age groups, so it included anybody over 18 years of age right up. And of course, what we found was that only 5% had documented their wishes with regard to place of care. And when we looked at the over 65s, which people should be more alert to these things, only 9% of people over 65 had documented. And this gives rise to huge problems in practice. One, it gives rise to a situation where, as you say, we leave it in the very last minute, but actually we leave it until we're in crisis point. Many times, you know, when a person has to be discharged from hospital, they're in a bad place, they're very ill and whatever, and people are trying to find out what are their wishes. The other thing is, from this survey, and again, we were kind of aware of this, we've a huge misunderstanding in Irish society that your family member or your next of kin can make decisions on your behalf when you're unable to. And in fact, of course, you can't unless you've been given that legal authority. And even for frail older people, the survey indicated that people thought that they could make decisions on behalf of a frail older person, even when that person had decision-making ability. And as we all know, we need the consent of the person both for health care, place of care decision, dealing with the finances or whatever. So we need to plan in advance and appoint somebody to make those decisions when we're not in a situation, and to make sure that when we're old and frail, we make our own decisions. So we all have an obligation, you know, to think about these things and plan for them. And many, many older people, again, we have a tendency to take over and take control, oh, she's old or he's old or whatever, and to try and make decisions. That gives rise to difficulties for healthcare professionals or other people that have to interact. They need the consent of the person. And when we have capacity, we can give the consent, and we should be supported if we're old and frail or ill or have a disability. We should be supported to make that decision. And if we lack decision-making capacity, then we should have already put something in place, appointing somebody to make those decisions. So really important. The other thing that came out from the survey is that 85% of us want to be at home for long-term care. And that is a repeat of many other surveys previously who indicated that the vast majority of us want to be at home for long-term care. And that doesn't happen in a lot, in many respects. It doesn't happen for a number of reasons. And one is that we have either hospital care availability, or we have nursing home care. And for nursing home care, we can get state supplement or financial assistance from the state for that. But for home care, it's very limited, and there isn't proper state funding for home care. And we're promised now, and the legislation hopefully will have it, we're promised statutory home care by 2021. But it's really important that we indicate our wishes, because many people are in a nursing home or in place of care that they do not wish to be. Now, it's not always possible to exceed or respect our wishes, but where it is possible, then those wishes should be carried out.
I was just listening to you there, and there was two things that came to mind that maybe you could comment on. One being that when you decide, or if you decide you want to go into a nursing home or that you want home care, both things take quite a while to organise. You know, if you leave it to the very last minute, you're taking your chances on what availability is there's going to be in nursing homes, and then the second one, if you want home care, your home probably isn't set up to look after somebody.
Yes, and this is a huge issue where, again, there's delay in getting a grant if you need, say, a stair lift, or if you need a bathroom downstairs. Now, there's a lot of work and we have to prepare. We're all living longer, as we know. Quite a number of us will be in a situation where we need care. And a lot of the local authorities now are working together, and many organisations, to ensure, one, when we're building a house, we build with wider doors for wheelchair. Two, we have a bathroom downstairs. And at the moment, there's people can be delayed from being discharged from hospital because there's a huge delay in waiting for that grant for the bathroom downstairs or whatever. So all of that, we can, in our lifetime, as we go along, we should be looking at those issues and preparing, again, ourselves. But in terms of the selection as well, I mean, many people like to be at home and then go to a hospice. That was one of the options that people wanted, rather than into nursing home. A hospice was one of the after being at home with family. So at end of life, people want to be in a hospice. So again, it's important that we document that. Again, of course, we don't have enough hospice care. But as a society, we have to start talking about these things and ensure that services are being provided. We can't go on the way we are and ignoring, you know, at the moment, for example, about 13% of the population is aged over 65 years. In 20 years' time, that's going to be about 25, 26%. And a proportion of those people will need long-term care. Also, at the moment, we've a number of people under the age of 65 in inappropriate long-term care, people with disabilities, and the Ombudsman is carrying out an investigation into that at the moment. So again, we don't have appropriate alternative places of care. But many people could be still at home if the home was able to accommodate them. So we need to be thinking about those things ourselves. Now, thankfully, many homes now are being built with that downstairs bathroom or whatever, but that should be a given.
I know I moved home about 10 years ago. We purchased my grandmother's, or not my grandmother, my wife's grandmother's house, and we did it up. And one of the things both of us insisted on, that we would have an actual wet room downstairs.
Yes.
So that as we got older, if we were ever in the situation of being in a wheelchair, you could be just wheeled in, and there was no having to lift and so into baths,
sure,
things
sure.
like that.
Yes.
It was just one of those things.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, we're not even old when we have that accident or whatever. You know, so the downstairs bathroom really, for many, many reasons, and even when you have children, you know, playing sport at first and whatever, coming in, you know, it's much easier to have a downstairs bathroom with a shower that you can walk into and all of that. So it's really important that we think about those things. But particularly, it's extremely important where a person is quite immobile and other family members are not in a position to do lifting and all of that. So really, really important.
The other thing I was going to ask you about is the cost of documentation and the cost of setting out who's going to make the decisions for you. My understanding is that it's actually quite a costly process.
Well, I'll tell you, not for doing your place of care decision and not for doing your healthcare decision. You can get the Think Ahead form, which is published by the Hospice Foundation. You can get it on www.thinkahead.ie. Now, that's a quite detailed form. It's a very helpful form because it asks you to set out a lot of your information, including where your accounts are, your insurance, all of that. But also, very interestingly, it sets out how you can document your place of care or your healthcare decisions. You do not need to go to a solicitor or a doctor to do either of those. And in fact, it would be obviously beneficial if you had a chronic illness or whatever, that you did speak with your treating doctor on that, but you don't have to. And the document actually is drafted to comply with the new Assisted Decision-Making Capacity Act of 2015, which hasn't yet been fully commenced, but in terms of your treatment decisions. But you should set out, document it, sign it, have your signature witnessed. Very important that, again, you're not put under pressure to nominate a particular individual or whatever. And review it from time to time. You do it, and take time in reading that form. You don't have to go at it. It's quite a long form, but at the same time, very useful. And when you're going through it, it will prompt you about different issues, and you should then talk to somebody. Now, also, it's really, really important that when you're appointing a person or persons, you should select somebody, one, that you trust, and two, that is a suitable person to make your decisions, that you can rely on, that will carry out your wishes rather than deciding themselves what's best for you. So really, really important that your wishes, you can rely on that person to carry out your wishes. Yes, on the other hand, if you want to make an enduring power of attorney, and that is a legal document where you do need to go to a solicitor to execute that document, and that deals with mainly your finances and your legal affairs. But also many people, and you rightly say legal fees can be expensive. At the same time, it's worthwhile spending that money on the one hand. On the other hand, if you cannot afford that, you may qualify for legal aid, and you could go to one of the legal aid boards for assistance then with that. But again, it's really, really important that those documents are completed, and particularly when we're well and we think about it and discuss it with people that, you know, can be of assistance to us at that time. And then when we do it, as I say, it's worthwhile to review it every year or so when you have it.
Thank you for that, because it's something I actually hadn't thought of, that you could go to free legal aid if you were in a position that you couldn't afford it. But, you know, leaving that aside, even, you know, people on modest incomes who may not qualify for free legal aid, you know, you're talking a few thousand. I, off the top of my head, I think it may be 1,000 or 1,500 to get the documentation drawn up. And
well,
then,
I'll tell you, I'll tell you what one of the difficulties is, that lawyers charge by their time, and people go without having done good homework. So if you go not even knowing what an EPA is or whatever, the lawyer then is spending time. Now, it does, it's a legal document, so it must be formally executed and all of that to get it right. Does take a bit of time. But again, on the Think Ahead website, there are details about the enduring power of attorney, and, you know, you can appoint more than one person, what sort of decisions you can appoint them for and all of that. So it's worthwhile doing a bit of homework before you go, and then, you know, perfectly understanding when the solicitor is explaining to you. But the solicitor has to make a statement that you understand exactly the implications, because actually, you know, what you're doing is you're appointing somebody to look after all your assets and all your money when you lack capacity. And that's a huge authority to give to somebody. And again, currently, and that is done currently under the 1996 Act, where we don't have proper oversight of the attorneys. Now, under the 2015 Act, when it comes about, the attorneys will have to, and will be, there will be oversight by the Director of Decision Support Service. But at the moment, there isn't that oversight. So really important that the people you choose, you can trust to look after your affairs. And again, currently, if you want to make a complaint about an attorney under the 1996 Act, the current situation is it's an application to the High Court. It's very expensive. Under the 2015 Act, a complaint can be made to the director. And she, Áine Flynn, is the new director. She can actually carry out an investigation. So things are getting better, but we need the commencement of the 2015 Act. But currently, you can do the EPA, but be careful when you're doing it and who you appoint. Do your homework and understand. But again, I would plead people. I know people don't like paying legal fees, and it can be expensive. But sometimes it's very worthwhile to do that, and then there's a lot of peace of mind for having done it.
Am I correct in saying that it's a two-stage process, where you get the documentation and that drawn up, but then it has to go to the court for the court to
register. Yes. So when, and indeed in all of these, both for your enjoying power of your attorney, your place of care decision, and your healthcare directives, all of those you make them when you have the capacity to do so. When you can make the decisions, you talk about whatever, you set them out, you sign them, you execute them, you have them witnessed. They do not come into effect until then, a situation where you lack decision-making capacity. For the EPA, it is registered in the High Court, but actually, and that registration process, it takes a little bit of time. It's not a court application as such. It's registered in the office of the High Court. The other two, actually, your place of care decision, at the moment, you write it, and indeed your healthcare at the moment, you just write them and have them witnessed, and they will come into effect. There's no registration process for those at the moment. Under the new Act, there will be notification to the director that you've set out your healthcare wishes or whatever. So the director will know that you've... Because the whole issue is that when you lack capacity, people want to know what documents you've executed. Have you appointed somebody? So the director will have a register with all of these set out. So if I, say, have a very bad accident and I'm brought into an A&E, the doctor may need to know, have I appointed somebody to make my healthcare decisions? And that will be accessible through the register of the director. But as I say, we're waiting for the full commencement of the 2015 Act for that. But even at the moment, if I write out my healthcare wishes or my place of care wishes, that should be respected, but I should tell my doctor, my GP, maybe I've done that, maybe give him or her a copy and tell my family members I've done that, or my friends or whatever, whoever are the people closest to me. So at least they know that I have those documents and they are accessible if the time comes when I lack capacity to make decisions for myself.
And, you know, we should be making those decisions early and not leaving them to the last minute. But
absolutely.
Should we be just appointing one person, or should we be appointing a person and, in case that they're not available, somebody else? Should we be thinking that way forward as well?
Yes. Now, very, very good question, Michael. In the sense for your enjoying power of attorney, I think there's safety in numbers. You can appoint more than one, appoint two or three, because, again, there's protection, you know, in dealing with your finances and everything. And in an EPA, an enjoying power of attorney, you can also appoint an alternative to that in the case of that person lacks capacity or has died or whatever or is unable to act. And then if you have appointed, say, two or three people, if one of them is unable to act, the others can carry on and continue to act. So that's for an EPA. For your healthcare decisions, you appoint one person because, as you can imagine, even at the moment, one of the big difficulties is when a person is admitted to hospital and the healthcare professional is asking family members, what are your mum's or your dad's wishes? Everybody has a different view of what they are and there's argument or whatever. So for your healthcare wishes, and the Act provides, you appoint one person and you can appoint an alternative person for that. In the event that the person you appoint, because it's really important that there's one person in terms of talking about your healthcare decisions, and similarly for your place of care decision, you can appoint one or you can appoint more than one. But really important that you do appoint alternative or alternatives in the event that the people that you appoint cannot act.
And I have to say, many thanks for chatting with me this morning, Patricia. But I have just one last question, and I'm sorry for
sure.
holding you so long. In the case of a married couple, does the other partner have power of attorney over the...
No. So again, Michael, you're hitting all the right buttons here. Because again, as a society, we all think that our family member can make decisions. And particularly, you know, spouse or children then when we're older. That is not the case. Anybody over 18 years of age in appointing an attorney or appointing anybody for any of these can appoint anybody they wish. It does not have to be their spouse, their partner, their child or whatever. However, they have to serve notice on their family members, to notify their family members they've done this. But the person they appoint is entirely up to them. And in some cases, say you have, say, a person who's well in their 80s, who has a spouse who's well in their 80s, really it's better not to appoint that other elderly person, you know, as your attorney or as your person who's making your healthcare decisions. Of course you can if you want to, but you certainly need maybe to appoint an alternative. But you can appoint whoever you want, but as I say, the legislation does provide that you give notice to family members so they're aware of whoever is appointed.
Patricia, many, many thanks for chatting with me this morning. Maybe you would just give the listeners the links.
Think Ahead.
Yeah, where they can get that.
So the Think Ahead form is www.thinkahead.ie, and there's information on that about an enduring power of attorney as well. There's also the Safeguarding Ireland website, which is www.safeguardingireland.org. There's a lot of information on that and a lot of links to other organisations such as HSE, Safeguarding and Protection Teams, and other things like that. And then there's a document which is Keep Control, and again, for your money and all of that, very good document, easy to read, www.keepcontrol.ie. And again, things like about be careful of joint bank accounts, all of those sort of things. So useful information on all of that.
Patricia, once again, many, many thanks for coming on and chatting with me this morning. Thank you again.
Thanks, Michael, for having me. All right, bye-bye.
All the best. Lonlat. Bye-bye.